Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Another outstanding show lined up for you, if I do say so myself. And the reason they're so good is it's not just me talking for 30 minutes, because that would, well, let's be honest, that might get old real quick. So I find with some wonderful help, by the way, from my office, Beth Moothart is helping me do amazing things with lining up great guests like Ann Turgeson, journalist for the Wall Street Journal. She writes in their Wall Street Journal and Encore section, and she comes to us with, well, it's quite a pedigree. She has written a monthly column in the Wall Street Journal Sunday, which appears in 70 newspapers nationwide, regular contributor to the Encore section on MarketWatch.com, the blog about retirement. And prior to joining the Journal in 2008, she worked for Business Week magazine, and she's covered subjects like personal finance. She has been the recipient of two Medill Strong Awards. And welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Did I say that correctly? Is it Medill?
Yeah.
Okay, close enough. I am very pleased to have you come on because your writing is, well, let's just call it what it is. It's spot on. You're hitting some real key subjects for American workers and also retirees, which, of course, is what this is all about. Ultimately, people want to retire and be able to enjoy that retirement. And you wrote a couple of really interesting articles recently that they caught our attention. And one that I was really looking forward to talking to you about was the one back from November of 2014. That was titled "Why Everything You Think About Aging May Be Wrong." So that's a pretty bold statement.
Yeah,
I like that. So we'll start wherever you want with this. But I do a lot of work with people who are retiring and who are thinking about their own aging, or maybe they're planning their retirement, and I'm working with them about that as well. But once people get into retirement, I think people have a lot of preconceived notions about what that retirement is going to look like and what they're going to do and what some of the risks or concerns are going to be. And it ends up, and I think a lot of what you wrote with your article kind of calls into question some of that traditional thinking. So let's talk about that. What are some of the things, what would be the first thing that you would put out there is maybe the way we think about retirement, maybe, or aging, what may be wrong about it?
Sure. Yeah. Well, the article is really focused on aging, and I think, you know, when people think about aging, they think about a lot of negative things. There's a lot of stereotypes, and I was trying to take on some of the most prevalent stereotypes and look at the actual scientific research and see, you know, whether the stereotypes kind of hold up or not. So, for example, one of the ones that people have is that, you know, as people age, they become inevitably become more depressed. And so, I mean, it's actually really easy to assume that it would be kind of a depressing time of life, right? Because people often experience health problems, or they see friends or relatives experiencing health problems, or, you know, the prevalence of death among their peer group increases. So those facts alone would be kind of depressing. But actually what psychologists have found, and this is pretty much accepted wisdom among the academic community, the psychologists in academia, what they're finding is that actually emotional well-being improves until the 70s, and then it pretty much levels off. So, you know, even reports that I've read looking at well-being among centenarians, people who live to 100 or older, report pretty high levels of well-being. So the story that, you know, as you age, you get inevitably become depressed is just, it seems to be not the case.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting because I think that is that shift and that transition into retirement and aging is where we hear about some of that. And it's interesting that there's actually been studies done that I know that you've written about and that you've looked to, and where it's really, this is empirical data. This is based on facts, just not what people say that they think people are feeling. This is based on real research.
Yeah, so actually one of the studies that, it's been a long-term study, and it was started in the early to mid-90s, and scientists at Stanford are the ones who are responsible for this study, but basically they looked at about 180 adults, and they gave them beepers, and for 1 week, at five randomly selected times during the day, the researchers paged the subjects who were in the experiment, and they asked them to fill out questionnaires. And in the questionnaires, they asked them to indicate, which of 19 emotions they were feeling. And these included everything from anger to sadness to joy to boredom. And what the researchers did was they repeated that same exercise with the same group 5 and 10 years later, and they looked at the ratio of positive and negative emotions. And what they found is that as these people aged, the ratio of positive emotions increased. So they were feeling more positive on balance as they got older. So that's sort of how they're defining well-being. And you're right, these are quantitatively based studies.
Interesting. Because there's a lot of stereotypes that go into, of course, aging, and we could talk about a lot of them, but there's, concern. How does, one of the questions is, how does cognitive impairment or slowing down in thinking affect some of this, the potential for depression or the potential for some of these negative emotions that you referred to?
Right. Well, I mean, a lot of people have looked at cognitive, people are very concerned about their cognitive mm-hmm. health as they age, right? So
sure.
There's been a lot of research done into that area, and there's a huge amount, and I don't feel that I can, adequately summarize, the breadth of the data out there. But there are a growing number of researchers who are trying to look at not just what goes wrong as people get older, but also look at what goes right in terms of cognitive health, right? So there's a lot of data showing that as you get older, your brain's sort of raw processing speed, the speed with which you come to, new conclusions, that goes down. And so the raw kind of firepower of your brain goes down. But over time, you become more experienced, too.
Right.
You gain experience. And so there's a lot of researchers are looking at the sort of interplay between those two forms of intelligence. And the question is, is the experience that you're gaining offsetting the declines in sort of your brain's raw processing speed? And there are definitely researchers who would say that that's true. I mean, I even read a study from someone at the University of Virginia that sort of quantifies the losses and the gains. And according to him, they do sort of offset at least up to a certain age. So there is a lot that goes right in terms of even cognitive, your brain's cognitive functioning as you get older. And, and that has to do with experience. So for example, there's a really interesting experiment that I looked at that shows that people, as they get older, become wiser. And so again, these are this is an experience-based form of intelligence. It's, are you making kind of smart decisions? And these are scientists who come from a variety of different places, including the University of Waterloo. And they tested about 250 people of all different age groups, and they asked them to read them stories and about conflicts, and they asked them to predict the outcomes. And they found that, in general, the older people made wiser predictions.
Well, I was that's an excellent way of summarizing, because I was, as you were describing that, and I was thinking that, well, what's the good of making a fast decision with that raw processing power you're talking mm-hmm. about that may mm-hmm. accompany youth, that if it's the wrong decision? You get
right.
there quicker, but it's not a bad thing to be a little slower with your thought process if you end up with the right decision.
Right, and you have this wealth of information to fall back on. I mean, you kind of know from years and years of experience, well, in theory, we might think the outcome would be this, but we know from years of experience that rarely happens. So,
right.
You can really sort of overlay your years of experience in a way that gets you to a more nuanced answer. And that's what they were finding, that the older people really came up with much more nuanced answers and recommendations that would actually work in the real world.
Because of that experience.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
I was thinking of another quote, I think I saw it on LinkedIn, that the quote was, instead of thinking about everything that can go... Wait, let me back up. Instead of thinking about what's the worst possible thing that could happen, like what's the worst case scenario, How about thinking about what the best case scenario is, or what's the best thing that can happen? Because this, what you're referring to is about with the aging, it's not, you know, there's actually good things and people reporting positive things about that experience. So it's not all negative.
Right, exactly. And that's sort of the point of this article. You know, in some areas, you know, like with well-being, the data shows that well-being increases with age. That doesn't mean that everybody's going to experience that.
Right,
I mean,
right.
Are there older people who are depressed? Definitely.
Sure.
Definitely. But by and large, you know, if you're going to generalize, you find lower rates of depression among older people. And in fact, I actually cross-checked that with some national data. I looked up some National Institute of Mental Health data, and that shows that rates of serious depression among older adults, or with adults 50 and older, are about 5.5%. If you look at people ages 26 to 49, the rate is 7.6%, and if you look at people 18 to 25, it's 8.9%. So you can see right there
that the rates
of serious depression are actually lower among the older population.
How about the other parts of this? You know, some of the why everything you may think about aging may be wrong. Some of the other things that people think about, we talked about the cognitive decline, you know, not necessarily being inevitable. Some of the other things that are out there, of course, is that older workers are less productive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, yeah, I could speak from experience that's definitely not the case, because you know, my team, my personal team that helps me do the work I do, we've got some that have a little more gray hair than others.
Right. Well, there's a lot of studies that have been done in this area, and I spoke to a number of people who are very familiar with a lot of the studies that have been done, including one researcher out in Akron, Ohio, at the University of Akron, and he said, and this is what these other studies indicated too, is that there's virtually no relationship between age and job performance on the whole. That studies really just don't find that older workers are more productive or less productive. That said, you know, there are some studies that focus on jobs that require experience, and there again, some
right.
of these studies are showing that older workers do have a performance edge. So, you know, I think to the extent that a job requires experience, there is an argument to be made that older workers have an edge, but you know, that's within the context of saying that most studies actually don't show
right
one or the other having an edge.
Well, to avoid getting myself in trouble, Anne, I'll finish the point, which is that it's a great team I have, and it does include quote unquote what you would call older workers. I think they're fantastic. So let me make sure I got that right so I don't get myself in trouble. It's good. No, it's helpful because I think people need to understand this perspective. Another one I want to make sure we get to is also another common subject as it relates to aging, and that's loneliness. That there is this, you know, this, and I think this plays into a real fear that a lot of people have as they get older, that they, you know, that family has moved away or maybe isn't as close, or friends have moved away or have aged, and maybe some have died, or if somebody loses a spouse or partner, you know, these are all concerns that attribute or could be, you know, raise a concern about being alone, and that there be a more of a likelihood of being lonely.
Right, exactly. That's another really prevalent stereotype, the stereotype of like the elderly, mostly, you know, a woman, a widow, who is on her own and is lonely. And so actually, when you look at the scientific research, you know, again, coming from a lot of psychologists within academia, it seems to be pretty accepted wisdom that, in fact, older people have better quality relationships than younger people do. And I think it's related to the notion, well, basically, as people age, the findings from, or the theory from these psychologists is that as people age, they tend to focus on the positive. They want to prioritize emotional meaning and emotional satisfaction in a way that younger people don't. Younger people are much more focused on gaining information and knowledge and sort of getting ahead in the world. Older people and younger people are more interested in making ties, making new ties, which makes sense. You know, you're out there, you're trying to make your way in the world, both in terms of meeting people in a social sense and also in terms of a job sense, right? But the older you are, the more you're going to prioritize your emotional meaning and satisfaction, and the more you're going to be sort of, that gives you more of an incentive to see the positive in things. And from a social perspective, as you get older, you're more likely to kind of look for the positive within relationships that you have and really kind of focus on the positive. So what actually the scientific literature seems to indicate is that older people report that they actually have better relationships.
Yeah, well, that's encouraging, and I'm glad that we can, you know, debunk that myth or that stereotype. Ann Turgeson's our guest today, ladies and gentlemen, journalist for the Wall Street Journal. And be sure to check out the Wall Street Journal's blog and the Encore section, of course. And we're going to grab a quick break, and I've got a couple things. I'll come back and talk about this subject a little bit further, and then we're going to get to some other interesting topics. So stay right there. We'll be back with Ann.
What if in the time it takes to eat lunch, you could potentially strengthen your financial future? Would you invest 1 hour to plan stronger? If you spend just 1 hour with certified financial planner David Holland, you'll get simple, straightforward advice to help you plan stronger. And if you already have a financial plan, isn't it worth an hour to get a second opinion? There is no cost or obligation to meet with David. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com for more information.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. More with Ann Turgeson, journalist for the Wall Street Journal. And before the break, I said, hey, there's a couple more things here, and I want to get to this because another big topic in this area of why everything you think maybe about aging may be wrong, which was Ann's article that we saw and wanted to talk about. One of the other areas, Ann, that I wanted to get to was this whole industry of exercise and there being this thought that, well, you know, once you get to a certain age, you know, the elevator just doesn't go all the way back up to the top anymore.
Yeah, well, there's actually a lot of evidence that that shows that exercise is really beneficial as people age. As a matter of fact, you know, it seems to be one of the variables, if not the variable, that seems to make a lot of difference in terms of staving off mortality and health problems.
That makes a big difference, and people, you know, I think I will say that the recovery time could be a little longer, and I will say it takes a little longer to get back. It seems to go slip away quicker than it did, say, oh, I don't know, 20 years ago. But there is definitely a key component to aging, being that more exercise is actually better, as opposed to you know, people saying, well, no, I'm not going to bother.
Right, definitely. And I've read several studies that compared sort of the couch potato to, there's a lot of studies that looked at joggers for some reason. I don't know why, maybe running's just really popular among the researchers, and so they're curious about the effect. But these studies that look at the joggers seem to really show a health benefit to the exercise group versus the non-exercise group. That said, there are some studies in very recent years, there's been a growing number of these studies that show that there may be a point of diminishing return with exercise. And so some of these studies that looked at people who perform, I can't remember the exact numbers, but it's like more than 60 minutes a day. And I think that comes to mind, you know, more than 60 minutes a day of sort of intense cardio exercise, that there's some debate now as to whether too much exercise may not be a good thing, and that you can actually have diminishing returns in terms of the health benefits, and some studies even indicate that you actually can do some harm in terms of mortality rates. And so some of these researchers are saying the sweet spot for this exercise is sort of moderate exercise.
Right. Well, also don't overdo it. That's the lesson there. Everything in moderation, as they say. Well, speaking of stimulating our brains, let's jump over to another topic, because you had another very interesting article, Ann, that I wanted to get to, and that was this back in December of 2014. Charitable IRA rollovers could get a reprieve, and they're... Let's talk a little bit about that, because I think that's a really a fascinating subject for a number of reasons. I'm a big believer in charity and the opportunity here. Let's walk through it and talk about it, because there could be an opportunity for people to still take advantage of what was an attractive tax provision, and we can kind of walk through it. So kind of give us a little background, and we'll talk through it a little bit.
Sure. Well, I think it's since 2006, I believe, this tax provision has been passed by Congress. And instead of making it a permanent thing. Congress usually kind of passes a two-year allowance where people are allowed to take advantage of this. So what it is that you, for people who are 70 and a half or older, they're required to take distributions from their tax-deferred IRAs and 401ks. But this provision allows them to directly transfer money from their IRA to a charity. And the benefit there is that the income never hits their tax return. So it's as if you didn't have that money included in your tax return, which saves you money on taxes. So
because if it shows up on your return, there are deduction limits. There's 50% for cash of adjusted gross income. There's 30% for property use, and then it also could affect your things that people would never think of, like what you pay for your Medicare Part B premium. And it has an effect in a lot of other areas. And so if you simply can give the IRA, you don't have to give the whole IRA, but part of it, transferred over, it never shows up on your return, which is always a good thing.
Right, which is a great thing. I mean, definitely for people who itemize, it's a great thing. Even for people who don't itemize, it's a great thing. So, so it's a no-brainer. The problem here is that Congress reenacted this, but only for 2014.
Right.
So, in effect, if you haven't taken advantage of it, if you didn't take advantage of it by December 31st, we don't know whether this is going to be an option for 2015. I mean, that said, Congress has a pattern.
A bad pattern, Ann. I'm gonna say it because they like to play this game. They did it. They did it in 2014, right up until I think it ended up being like December 27th or something like that, that they did the whole extension of, had kept people in limbo all year long about avoiding the inclusion of income on mortgage relief. And it wasn't until the very end of the year they said, okay, we'll do it.
We'll do it, right.
So
same with the IRA.
Hopefully with this one, they will let us know sometime soon so we can make it part of our planning for the year.
I wouldn't bet on it. I would bet again that they wait until the very end of the year, and then they say, okay, we'll do it, and we'll make it retroactive to January 1st. Now, that said, people should know that if they might want to take advantage of this, there are they can, if they're charitably inclined and they want to give money from their IRA to charity, which is a good move tax-wise, what they should do is do a direct transfer. Instruct your IRA custodian to directly transfer the money, because that way, if Congress retroactively enacts this for 2015, you will be able to take advantage of it.
They do a lot of this, 1 year at a time. I don't know how long it's been since we've had an actual pass budget. It's not all these stopgap measures that we have to fret, negotiate, and they play chicken with our collective economic car, and they play games and all this nonsense, and they just won't go ahead and get budgets passed, and so we can rely on them, including tax law provision. This is a great provision for people who are in a position to be able to do this, or who, as you said, Ann, who are charitably inclined. Being on the conservative side in terms of being careful, I would definitely caution people to watch for any, regulations that go out. The problem I have with this, which is a little bit of more of a philosophical fretting on my part, which is that it's really hurts the charities for them to create this uncertainty.
Yeah.
Because otherwise somebody might say, okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and do this now. I'll go ahead and do it right away at the early part of the year, as opposed to waiting until they get that clarity. Because if they listen to me, I'm going to tell them to wait to clarity.
Right, and the other problem is for somebody who's 70 and a half or older, those are the only people who are able to take advantage of this IRA rollover provision. Well, of course, they have to take their RMDs. And if you're kind of playing a game of waiting for Congress, you might end up waiting until the very end of December until they reauthorize this. And that means you just have to move quickly and make sure that that RMD is taken by the end of the year, and if you want to directly transfer some of that RMD to charity, go ahead. That's sort of the beauty of this. But if you don't do it by the end of the year, you're subject to potentially a 50% penalty on what you should have taken.
Yeah.
A huge hit. So
that's a big hit.
Yeah. You just have to be really careful.
I think that's the most important part of this, is to be careful. Ann Turgeson, ladies and gentlemen, journalist for the Wall Street Journal. And be sure to check out the Wall Street Journal and the Encore section, especially where you'll see and doing her good work with her excellent articles. We're going to grab a quick break. We'll come back with Ann. Stay right there.
Do you know how to get the most from Social Security? Don't let a simple mistake prevent you from receiving all the benefits you've earned. David Holland recently showed a retiring couple how they could get an extra $84,000 in Social Security benefits over their expected lifetime. Wow! Don't leave your money on the table. Call Holland Financial today for your one-on-one appointment. David can do a free analysis for you and show you the optimal age to start drawing Social Security and filing techniques to maximize your benefits. There is no cost or obligation. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Ann Turgeson on the line with me, generously giving of her time to our program and weighing in. And we, of course, enjoy seeing Ann's work in the Wall Street Journal and the blogs and all of that, Wall Street Journal, WSJ.com. And I wanted to circle back around. We just got a couple minutes left, Ann, and I know that you know you write a lot about these subjects that affect people both with their personal finances and also, you know, going into this. We talked earlier in the program about the aging. From the work you do, I'd be curious, what are you seeing really are some of the big things that people are concerned about, quote unquote, these days? What are you hearing or on people's minds? Because my listeners, they listen to this program, they're everyday people. And, you know, I think it always helps that people understand kind of what are other people thinking about than some of these concerns that we've talked about?
Well, this aging article really tapped a lot of interest. I mean, I didn't get a lot of emails back from readers sort of asking questions. I got a lot of, you know, thanks for the article, great article, which is really nice. And it was one of the most read articles. It was the most read article of the week that it was published, which was really nice for me. So, I mean, I think there is a lot of interest in that. In terms of, like, what concerns Wall Street Journal readers, I mean, taxes are really high on the list.
Sure.
And anytime I publish anything about tax-related topics, including the IRA rollover kind of related topics, people are very interested.
Do you think it's because of the sheer taxation about being overtaxed, quote-unquote, or, which I would argue is the second point I'm going to make, or it's just some of this uncertainty that we deal with that makes it frustrating to try to plan?
I think both. I mean, okay. I think Wall Street Journal readers, you know, I don't want to generalize. I mean, they're very smart people.
Yes,
and you look at the editorial page, and it's got sort of a conservative cast. And I think there's a lot of concern about excessive taxation, but I certainly don't want to speak on behalf of the readers. But yeah, I mean, I think they're concerned about both the uncertainty and the amount of taxes.
If we want to play hopscotch, we'll go play hopscotch. Don't make me play hopscotch with my taxes and trying to figure out which foot to jump on, I think is the collective frustration that a lot of people have. And thank you very much for being on the program with us. Ann Turgeson, ladies and gentlemen, journalist for the Wall Street Journal. Loved having you on, and we'll have to do it again.
Thanks very much.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.